Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of She's the Barista. Ja, hallo. Very great to have you back, and hello to everyone who is listening for the very first time. This podcast is kindly supported by Rancilio Germany. Thank you so much for making this possible. And the episode you're about to listen to is very different to all of the episodes I've done so far, because it is not a person who has competed several times in a competition. She has changed my life in a very different way and inspired me so much that I thought it would be such a waste to not have her on this podcast. A couple of weeks ago, I got invited to visit Brazil, and I visited a farm called Da Terra. Juliana was the person who was had to show me everything and had to make sure that I'm not running away, I guess. But she's also the art director of the masterpieces of Da Terra. But before I explain too much about her, let's just welcome her and talk with her.
And here she is. Welcome, Juliana. I'm very happy to have you here.
Hi, hello. Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to be here.
Juliana, we actually have met not long ago. It's now a little bit more than a week. When you and your company invited me to go to Brazil.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a lot about what happened in Brazil, all those beautiful memories that you helped me create. And
a lot happened in Brazil.
Yes, a lot. And for our listeners, you are a very special guest on my podcast because you are not my usual guest. A lot of people know that in this podcast, I feature a lot of competitors or, people that have competed in the past, and you are very different to that, but I think you are such an exciting and special person that I really, really want to have you on this podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
First of all, for maybe also for me a little bit, I mean, I've met you in person, but we haven't really talked about your past. I know you've been a barista or you worked as a barista, but... Yeah. Can you maybe introduce yourself a little bit to everyone who's listening? Where you're coming from? How did you start? How did you make your way into coffee? And what is your position you're working at in the moment?
Okay, sure. So I'm Juliana, and I am in charge of the communications of Da Terra. That is a super exciting job to have because I get to work very closely with the quality team at the farm, with the innovation team. I know about the researches. Also, I taste a lot of coffee because I'm the person who's in charge of seeing all that's happening in the farm and translating that and bringing it to you, everyone in the market. So it's a really privileged position to be because I get to travel and meet great people like Nicole, but I also work very closely with the people at the farm. So yeah, I couldn't be happier, to be honest. yes, you're right. I was a barista a long time ago. I worked as a barista for about 1 year in a coffee shop. Back then, there weren't a lot of specialty coffee shops in Brazil. So actually, I was in college when I started working with coffee. I went to college for marketing and advertisement. And, you know, when you're 19 or 20 years old, you're going to college and you think you're going to only work with exciting projects and big brands and all of that. And then reality hits you in the face. And so I was working in an advertisement agency here in the city I live in, Campinas. But it was really boring because I was basically just translating menus for steakhouses or doing tabloids for supermarkets in the city, things like that. And I really wanted something more exciting. So I was a bit frustrated. I was wondering if I was going in the right direction. And one day I'm in the bus going back going back home after work, and I see that they're building this new place that looks really, really beautiful. So I go in to check it out, and I found out that it's a coffee shop that sells really, really good coffee. It's not open yet. So I just fell in love with the environment. Back then, there weren't a lot of coffee shops in Brazil. The coolest thing here back then was like Starbucks. and I thought it was super fancy. But when I walked in that coffee, it was not even ready yet. But I just fell in love with the environment. And I thought, like, I want to be here. I want to spend my whole day here. So I applied for a work there. I didn't know anything about coffee. Of course, my family consumed a lot of coffee, but I didn't know that there were quality grades of coffee or anything. But I thought, well, if I'm going to learn something new, it might as well just be now, because I'm still in college. I still live with my parents. I don't have any major bills to pay. So if I'm going to take a risk, it should be now. So yeah, I joined in. I took the barista course and I really, really loved it. And one day as I'm working there, we served good coffees, but one day we had a special espresso. It was like a new release. It was a little bit of advance. Yeah, we were serving good coffees generally, but then one day we had a special release. The head barista just came up to me and said, oh, so we have a new coffee today. It's from this farm. They're called the Terra. So this and this, you have to know this about this coffee. And yeah, it's a special release. I didn't know a lot about farmers back then, but when I had the coffee, I was just mind blown. I had never tasted anything like that. I think that day I had like 8 espressos, like easily. I just had it all the time. And that's when I got in contact with the Terra. So I saw that Gabriel, who works in the Terra, was actually someone that I knew from school. So I messaged him and said, hey, you know, I am going to be graduating from marketing school soon. So if there are any opportunities in the Terra, please let me know. And a couple of years later, he wrote to me, said that they had a position, and here I am now.
Incredible. How many years are you working for that Terra now?
It's going to be 7 years.
Wow.
Next year. Yeah.
And can you maybe explain to our listeners who, I mean, most of the specialty coffee people know what Datera is. You've said a couple of times it's a farm, but can you explain what kind of farm it is and why it is so famous?
Okay. So Datera is a farm that has the concept of producing great coffee in consistently and with volume. So for a long time, being a big farm there was a bad reputation around big farms, but we really wanted to prove that it's possible to produce great coffee every year and still be sustainable and still give back to the environment as much as we take, because of course we are producing coffee. Every agriculture production has an impact. Not only agriculture production, every human activity has an impact. But yeah, we really wanted to show that it's possible to produce volume and quality at the same time. So the Terra is most famous these days for the Masterpieces line, which is our very best coffees, like the super special types, the very small one, very small micro lots. But there is a lot more. There's just a very, very small fraction of what we do. We have other two lines of coffee with different qualities that we call the Terra Classics. These are the most basic, 80 to 84 points in the SCA scale, but also produce it every year with consistency of flavor. So if you like one of these coffees, you're going to have the same flavor every year. And then we have the Collection de Terra, which is a smaller production, coffees are a bit more complex, a bit more nuanced, but also produced very, very consistently every year. And then we have the Masterpieces, which are the experimental stuff, the stuff that may or may not be repeated one year after the other. And that's what people usually mostly associate the Terra with, but we have a lot more coffee than the Masterpieces line.
Yeah. Definitely. I've seen it all. and we, the two of us, actually met because Datera had a stand at a coffee convention in Brazil, where also the nationals were, by the way. And Gabriel, who you already mentioned, took part in this Brewers Cup competition. And he used a coffee from doTERRA, obviously. And he, in his first competition, big shout out to Gabriel, he placed second in the Brewers Cup of Brazil, which is already incredible and amazing.
It is. We are super proud of him. He brought a new technique. The coffee was amazing. He did great. So, yeah, big shout out to Gabriel. We're super proud.
Yeah,
he is. No, Gabriel is one of the, he's one of the best speakers in the coffee industry. Like, if you ever hear a lecture from him, a talk, he's just super magnetic.
Yeah, he is. It's he's captivating. You don't want to miss a word. It's really, really
good. Exactly. Yeah.
And for this show, you messaged me, or actually a friend of ours messaged me, if I would be keen to come to Brazil. I think it was 8 days before the convention. And I said, yeah, why not? No problem. And then there was like a whole lot of organizing to be done. But then once I arrived, we went, and I think the first night we just had dinner. So I just got to know you a little bit. And then at the second day at the convention, I got to know more about the masterpieces. We're going to talk a lot about the masterpieces in this podcast, because you've said a couple of times when I was there, this is your baby. And I was so impressed of how you have managed to be so creative in within the coffee world. And this is why I really want to have this episode with you, because it just inspired me so much. And I think if it inspires me, it should inspire the whole coffee world, to be honest. So when I came to the stand, there was a box with 12, it looked like peanuts, roasted peanuts in a can. But those were the green coffee samples. They all had a beautiful label. They came in a beautiful box. But then there was a booklet, and I started flicking through this booklet, and you have explained a little bit, like, there was a art exhibition in 1922, so exactly 100 years ago, and you chose 12 artists to represent the very, very best of the coffees that you had at doTERRA.
Yeah.
I loved the concept. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about this year's concept of the masterpieces?
Yeah, of course. I'm so glad that we are just doing the audio thing, because I look like a complete fool now. You were saying such nice things and my face is just melting, almost crying. So I'm happy nobody's seeing that. Well, thank you so much for the kind words, really. It means a lot to me, especially coming from you. It's a lot of extra energy that we put in these coffees to, you know, tell all these stories. So it really warms my heart when this work is recognized. But yeah, so the idea is that every year we select the best coffees from our masterpieces line. And these coffees, we usually have a very small amount of them, so they go to auction. We usually sell our coffees through our importers, but in the auction, anyone can participate. Roasters, baristas, anybody can join and can buy coffee. So this is the time when we reach a wider audience. You know, we feel like there are a lot more people who get in touch with our coffee through the auctions of the masterpieces. So we felt like it would be a good opportunity or an excuse to tell stories, because, well, if coffee is not the best medium to tell stories, like, what is, you know? And every year we try to select a theme from Brazil, because our country has such a beautiful heritage and a beautiful culture. There is so much to tell. There are so many stories to tell about Brazil. And many of these coffees are so integrated with coffee, because coffee is just part of Brazilian history. And so in the last couple of years, we've spoken about so many things. Like, there was a year where, in I think 2018, where we decided to highlight the regional music. So we selected super regional music from lots of regions in Brazil, not samba and bossa nova, this type of music everyone already knows about, but we select other types of music. There was a year where we talked about literature, so our coffees were inspired by these iconic characters of Brazilian literature. And last year, our theme was the astronomy system of the native folks of Brazil. It was such a surprising thing because even as Brazilians, we didn't know that the indigenous people of Brazil had such a complex astronomy system. The astronomy system that we know here is the Greek. We don't know about the indigenous. So we decided to tell the stories of our coffee through these constellations. And this year, is the centenary of the 1922 Modern Art Exhibition. So we felt like it was the perfect theme. It was something that was talked about a lot in Brazil this year. And if we didn't talk about it this year, we would have just talked about it in 100 years. So it had to be now or never. This is why we decided to go. But as I was researching the theme, actually the story was so fascinating. In the beginning, it was supposed to be about this exhibition, the 1922 Modern Art Exhibition. But in the end, I think it grew. The story was much bigger. It was a lot richer. There was a lot more details. So we decided to highlight the modern artists in general and not only those who participated in the exhibition of 1922. And this exhibition matters because back then, in 1920, what was considered art in Brazil was only this neoclassical and classical stuff, most of the time copies from what was happening in Europe. And most of the time it's actually outdated copies, like Europe was already in a different moment. You know, you guys were experienced Bauhaus and all of that. You guys are already experimenting, but Brazilian artists were still reproducing that. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. But there were a couple of artists who decided to produce art in a more free way, in a less constricted way, with less rules, and try to represent the diversity and the beauty of Brazil in a less formal way. And when they did, it was a scandal. the elite and the society would not accept that as art at all. And the biggest moment where this movement broke through was the exhibition of 1922. So it really was a turning point for arts, not only in Brazil, but in Latin America in general. And this story is very closely connected to coffee. And we felt that it was such an interesting thing that people wouldn't get to know in another way if it wasn't for us telling them through coffee. This is why we chose this theme this year.
And at the start of the catalog that you have released, you also made the connection, because a lot of people might be like, what does that have to do with coffee? Like, where's the connection between coffee and the arts of Brazil and all of this? And I think you've explained it very well that art and coffee are very strongly together.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Because it was a time where a lot of the agriculture changed in Brazil. It was a time between still past slavery, they're very poor, but also there was this will to be more European and everything like this.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had a couple of artists that have portrayed in a very beautiful way manual labor on coffee farms, for example, and they've put in who was it, Mario?
It was Cândido Portinari. Yeah. So yeah, back then what was considered beautiful were these super formal portraits, usually portraits of rich people, of government and all that. So when the modernists started portraying the people of the field, you know, people who were working in the earth, who were touching the earth, doing this manual, this heavy labor, it was a big scandal because back then this super biased society, they didn't think that these people were worthy of being represented. They didn't think that these people were worthy of being art, you know? So it was a huge breakthrough So, for example, Portinari, Candido Portinari that we were talking about, he was an excellent painter when he wanted, he, of course, he started his career doing neoclassical portraits, and they were super perfect and super formal, and he was super virtuoso in his painting skills. But that was not the art he resonated with. So when he started painting more freely and when he started to express himself and his world views, his paintings became more and more distorted. So if you look at his paintings, you see coffee workers a lot, many times. And usually the hands and the feet are a bit disproportionate. They are much bigger than the rest of the body. Because he wanted to emphasize the role of the hands and the feet on the soil. You know, he wanted to bring attention to the parts of the human body that really actively work the soil. And of course, back then, a lot of people would look at his painting and think that he didn't know how to paint better, that he didn't know how to use the appropriate proportions of a human body. But no, he was just bringing an idea visually in a different way.
Yeah, I love this story because that's the one that I remember really well. And then the story of the scandalo guy who like one tuxedo and one flip-flop and one shoe. So what really fascinated me reading this was like you helped me make a connection. You gave these coffees a story for me that had not necessarily like it, nothing really to do with the very, very intensive fermentation or because all of those coffees are incredible with the amount of work and effort that go into it, and they're very research driven and they're very experimental, I would say. But you made it easy for me to still make a personal connection by telling those stories, and at the same time you've really educated me on the past of Brazil, which is something that you've been doing for the last years with the masterpieces, always taking a part of the Brazilian culture, bringing it to the table, explaining it and connecting it with your coffees. That's why I was so impressed by it. And then that wasn't enough. Another layer of this was that you used AI to create art that is the labels of your coffee. Can you explain that a little bit?
Of course. We're talking about the AI thing, right?
We were talking about the AI thing. We just had to do a little break, but we're going to go straight back into it. So you've used AI, and in Brazil, it's quite common in the moment to use AI for modifying your own pictures. So you did go with the trend.
Yeah. No, actually, I learned about the AI a couple of months ago. And when I learned about it, it was in a very scary way, because when I learned about it, it was being, people were talking about, oh, this is the death of art, the artificial intelligence is killing creativity and all that. So I just thought, okay, it's a bit dramatic. Let's study. Let's see what that is about. And so when I started to understand the technology, it is a bit scary, but it's also so fascinating. So I just kept that, you know, in my reference book where I didn't use it. And when we were starting to do the auction, when we started doing the auction campaign, I thought, well, maybe we could use this, because the way people talk about artificial intelligence is very similar to the way people used to react to modern art. You know, people will go and see the artificial intelligence generated art and go, well, this is not art, this is something degenerate, this is something that is scary, I don't understand this, so I think it's scary, I don't think it's worthy, I don't think it's good. And I thought the connection was there, so I decided to use the AI technology to generate the arts for the auction. So what I did was, the way it works is that you pick an algorithm, there are lots of them. Some of them produces really photorealistic images. Some of them produce more abstract works. So I chose the abstract ones. And then you have to type in the inputs of what type of image do you want to see. And the technology will create it for you. So it's really a tool. But without you imagining it in the first place, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't have the ability to imagine, to create something, to conceptualize anything. You know, it's just a tool, but you have to conceptualize it first. Mm. So what I did, I typed in the type of image that I had in my head, usually using the taste descriptors of the coffee. Sometimes it worked really well. Sometimes I had to feed the algorithm with some works from the artist so the algorithm could understand the direction that I wanted to go. And it took actually a long time. It was a lot of trial and error. But I think we finally came up with 12 images that represent so well not only the coffee but the work of the artist that we selected, and we're really happy with the results. It's all the images are super beautiful, and there are so many things. It's something that you can spend some time looking at it and you will find details, and it's also super abstract. You kind of see something but it's not really there. I don't know, it's just, it was really fun.
I can agree.
No.
Which of the coffees is your favorite from all of them, from the 12 masterpieces of this year that I have also tried?
I'm sorry, did you say that you agree or did you not agree?
I said I agree. I totally agree.
Okay.
Yeah, it's always hard to verbalize art in a podcast. But if anyone's really interested, they can always visit the Datera website. Yeah. And all of the artists and all of the artwork from the AI are still on your website, and also the campaigns from the last years.
Yes.
So go online and look it up, because it's really, really fascinating.
Yeah, it's auction.datteracoffee.com.br.
Yeah. And which one of the coffees was your favorite?
Well, that changed a lot over the course of the campaign. When we first tasted, my favorite was Victor. Because I'm very partial to the aromosas. I love the profile, the floral, the bubblegum type of flavor. And we usually always get at least two type of aromosas. Sometimes we get this darker aromosa, you know, that is heavier, juicier. This one we call it Regina this year. And then we always get the lighter, brighter aromosas. And these would be Victor and Alfredo. They are more or less the same profile. But as the months progressed, I think my favorite now is Tarsila. It's the one we had at the farm. We brewed one right after the cupping. Actually, Jill Hoff brewed one. So, of course, she did a great job. If anybody would brew it well, it would be her. So the coffee tasted delicious. And I think that one is my favorite.
Yeah. I got some coffee that Gabriel gave me from his competition, and he used the Anita.
Anita.
I have to tell you, it is wild. So when he dialed in the Anita for his performance, and we set all of the flavor notes, it was very light and very delicate, to the point where I was already like, it's very light, this coffee. And it had like white and green grapes and jabuticaba.
did you try the jabuticaba? I heard that you got some at the market.
I got a whole bag. So jabuticaba is a fruit that's national to Brazil. And it looks like a giant red grape with thicker skin and white flesh in the inside, and you suck it out and it tastes delicious.
Yeah.
But very unique and really like nothing else that I can really reference. It's grapes, but it's also like passion fruit or young.
A bit of lychee, sort of, but yeah, it's difficult to describe. Yeah. But sometimes it's very present in coffee, but it's a type of description that we can never use if we're talking to a foreign audience, because nobody knows what jabuticaba looks like or tastes like. But now you do.
Now I do. it's a very good flavor note, actually. It's very, very accurate for a lot of coffees. So, yeah. But when we tasted this, Anita is the name of the coffee.
Yeah.
And it is a Lorena from the Variety. And yep. I mean, a lot of people will already know that Lorena already won the Worlds in with Amy in, oh my God, my years, 2018. And he brewed it and it was beautiful. It was very delicious. But I have brewed it here at home, the same roast. It is wildly different. It became super purple. It's so much more heavy than it was. It's really, perfumey now. It's crazy. I get like violets and elderflower. And I tried it yesterday and lots of plum. And I was like, this is not the same coffee. And I get the strawberry, but not the Brazilian strawberry. I get like real like Spanish sweet thick strawberry. It is really crazy, and I love it. I love how the coffee changed so much. For people that now wonder, like, is it the coffee that changed? No, it is the circumstances. For a lot of people that travel the world, they might know that competing with coffee in one country is very different to taking it to another country. That's why competing all over the world is very, very different and difficult. And that's why you really need to sort out which water you use and all of these things. The pressure in the air changes the flavor of the coffee, the height that you're brewing at, obviously the water. And for me, that was like, I know that this happens. I know that if you travel with coffee, it tastes completely different. But this was wild.
This is something. Well, I think this is the challenge every time we travel. Sometimes we love a coffee and we see so much potential in it. And then when you go serve it somewhere else, Melbourne was a place where this happened quite often.
Yeah,
it just doesn't taste the same. It just tastes a bit flat. I mean, you can taste the descriptor, but they are like in the background. They are not in the foreground like we want them. It's a bit frustrating, but I think it's also kind of cool that you can have such different experiences in different places. You know, this what you said about Anita, I think I get the grapes, I get the jabuticaba and a bit of plum here in Brazil, but not super like in it's not in your face like you said it was in Berlin. But one thing about the Lorenas are really crazy because they evolve so much over time. It's insane. Like sometimes we taste coffee about like in the beginning of September, end of August, we taste the lots and they have this profile. And then when you taste it again, like 3 months from there, it's just so different and so much better. So the Lorena, it for some reason, it just keeps improving, even if it's roasted. The shelf life of a roasted Lorena is just so much longer. It keeps getting better and better, even if the cough should be old, you know. It's just a crazy varietal.
And I feel that the coffee has definitely reached a new high, like the older it got, which is which I didn't think of the Lorena, because I feel the way that I think about Lorena is that it's a very delicate variety that's very elegant and very, I know how extremely difficult it is to grow now. So I always think like, it should be like consumed super fresh, maybe 4 days after roast, I don't know. But keep it a month in the bag, seriously, it's so good.
We actually did some tests and we found that the Lorena peaked after 22 days of being roasted.
Yeah.
So, and I think up to 2 months, it was still tasting really, really good. And it started to degrade a bit after 2 months of being roasted. So, I understand. With Lorena, we just want it. It's super rare. It's super exotic. So we want to consume it as fresh as possible. But sometimes you need to take your time. This is the kind of coffee that you want to brew just a little bit. And just keep it there for a while and then you see that it gets better.
And all of those coffees that you had in the, you said there was an auction. So the masterpieces, the 12 different coffees, are obviously in a very limited amount, and there was an auction, and I think it was 4 days ago, right? Today?
Yes, it was on Tuesday.
Yeah. And now, for people that have no idea how an auction works, like me, actually, I've never bought coffee at an auction. I have a rough idea, but so usually what we do as roasters or as coffee people that need coffee, we contact either the farm or we contact our importers. And usually the importers have your coffee in a list and blah, 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 and they know the prices. But this isn't for the masterpiece. For the masterpiece, you have a different auction. And by saying this, there is no set price.
Yeah.
So everyone can take part. Everyone can buy a lot if they offer more than the other people that are in the auction. How is it already sold out?
Yes, it's finished. So everything sold out.
How we long don't did have it anything. Take?
It took 3 hours this time.
God.
Yeah, it took 3 hours, and I always think about people who are in Asia or in Australia because it's always in the middle of the night for them.
Yeah,
but it didn't take too long this time. So the way that our auction works is, first thing you want to do is to buy the sample set. So you will receive the sample set. You saw what it looks like. We put a lot of love and effort in these sample sets because we really want... It's always so great when you buy something and you start opening and it's pretty and it's a lot better than you expected. So we always want this aesthetic factor in our sample sets. So the first thing you would do is buy the sample set, and then you receive 200 grams of green coffee for you to roast, taste, and decide your favorites. So when the auction day comes, all the coffees, they start with a bidding price, that they have a starting price. Mm-hmm. So this year it was $16 per pound. And then the bidding starts. So each bid is about 10 cents for a bid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people will go and they will bid and outbid each other. After all the coffees have at least one bid, then we start the countdown. So that is a 3 minute timer. Okay. And it resets every time someone places a bid. So, you know, it starts in 3 minutes and goes down. So whenever someone places a bid, it goes back to three. So that's when it gets exciting, because towards the end, the timer is almost getting to zero, and that's when someone places a bid, and that's when the auction never happens, and that's where the price battle really takes place. So this is how it usually happens, and we are really happy with how it came out this year. Our the coffee that was most looked after was the Anita, as we expected. So it was the one that sold for the highest price. It was the one that had the most bids. These three lots of Anita, one of them went to TAF in Greece, and two of them went to Canada, a company called I Drink Coffee. But all the other lots sold super well. We are really happy and really proud of the results. We're really happy with the people who bought them as well, because we're going to have this coffee spread all over the world, including Brazil. We have roasters in Brazil who bought coffee.
Which is not common. I've heard,
no,
or I've seen. So at the convention, I've learned a lot. For example, that in Brazil you cannot import green beans. That's illegal, yeah, correct?
Exactly, it's illegal.
That's crazy. Good for you. But the other thing that I realized is that Datera, as much as it's known worldwide, is not that known in Brazil. So
yeah,
maybe we'll go to another topic in this, like maybe that's our bridge to another topic that I really want to ask you. How would you describe the Brazil coffee market, like the coffee that's actually consumed in within Brazil? Because obviously what I've seen and what I've tasted was absolutely fantastic. But I feel like I'm a bad judge because I always get handed very, very nice coffee.
Of course.
What would you say is the average quality of coffee in Brazil? And what's the status? Like, how important is coffee for Brazil?
So I think coffee is just an everyday part. So coffee is just such an important part of Brazilian history and culture. So we consume a lot of coffee here, but as in many producing countries, the coffee that the general public consumes is very low quality, super dark roasted, you know, what kind of coffee I'm talking about. So there are people who want to have quality coffee, they will have to go into the specialty coffee shops to get the experience, because in the general market, you will not find really good coffee. So if you go to a gas station or to the supermarket, you're not gonna find good coffee. That is changing very, very slowly. These days, people are now starting to be more aware that there are quality grades of coffee. That's something that people didn't usually know about. They didn't know that coffee could be different, that there was good coffee and bad coffee. So that is happening now, but very, very slowly. And then we do have the specialty roasters, the people who work, who really want to highlight the efforts of the producer and the terroir. That is growing a lot in Brazil and has grown a lot in the last 5 years. For example, here I am in Campinas, which is a city that is close to São Paulo, but is not as big as São Paulo. And I don't know, 10 years ago, if you wanted to have a high quality coffee, you wouldn't find it here in Campinas. You would have to go to São Paulo, a bigger city, a bigger place for you to get it. But now even smaller cities, that they have at least one or two specialty coffee shops, so it's growing a lot. But the general public still likes super dark and super bitter coffee with sugar.
Like everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. Exactly.
And of course, maybe just fun fact, I think everyone already knows that Brazil is the worldwide biggest exporter of coffee. So you do have a lot of coffee farms. And yeah, that makes me go to our experience at the farm. Because after the convention, after I've been introduced to the masterpiece, after I've tried them for the very first time, I could spend another day in Belo Horizonte, because that's where the convention was. And then afterwards, I took quite a long way because my flights were off the bed. And we met again at the farm, the Terra. And I wasn't alone there. You've invited other people because you said it earlier. So there was Jill Hoff, for everyone who says like, oh, I kind of like know the name, but please remind me of when she is. She's the Canadian Barista Champion from last year.
2020, I think. She was a Brewers Cup Champion of Canada as well.
Yeah. So she won a couple of things, and she works for Monogram. And she also coached Ben Putt in the last Barista Cup, and I think also in Barista. So she knows. She knows a lot. It was the first time I'm actually meeting her. And it was I completely fell in love with her. She's amazing.
She's so sweet. Yeah.
She is the sweetest being, and she's hilarious. And
she seems the kind, when she arrived, she was a bit shy, she wouldn't talk a lot, but I think you, Nicole, you are really this person who makes people more comfortable, you know, because you laugh and you talk and you just like, you make people more comfortable to be themselves. So after you arrived, everyone was just feeling so relaxed and a lot more talkative, so There is an Nicole effect on that as well.
That's because I just talk so much and people are like, oh, no need to be quiet anymore. And she was there, and the one of the owners of Monogram.
Yes, Justin. He was there as well. And we also had John. He's a green buyer for La Cabra in Denmark.
La Cabra. Yeah. So we were four people visiting this beautiful farm. And as I arrived super late, because I was supposed to come like 6 hours earlier, I only had one day at the farm, which I could have extended, but I also kind of like had to fly back to Germany. So you kind of like had to stuff all of the amazing thing into one day. Let me tell you about this day. So first of all, I got to this beautiful farm. It was dark when I arrived, so I couldn't see lots. I just saw this guest house. So Datera is a farm that's obviously made a name for itself and so frequently visited that you do have guest houses for people mm-hmm. to stay over, which
two of them.
And
we are running out of space, to be honest. Like for this year, when we received the barista champions from the barista competition and the brewers competition, the house was full. They were sleeping in bunk beds. It was crazy.
So I had the luxury room. I had room all for myself. It was really
you
nice.
You did.
And when we started the day, I was already like, I think I had the best sleep ever. And I woke up and I was like, life is beautiful. I want a coffee farm. What else can I want? And we started the day with a beautiful breakfast and a cupping. And mm-hmm. you introduced us to the base office of your of Datera. Mm-hmm. And so it was, can you say me the names again? So it's the base is the classics?
Yes, the classics, the Terra classics are mm-hmm. the most basic, the entry level coffees from the Terra.
And then we really have the good.
They are really good. I mean, of course, when we work in the specialty industry, we get a bit spoiled because we are always drinking incredible coffee. But these, the Datera Classics, they are delicious. They are what people usually think of Brazilian coffee. So they are full of chocolate. They have full body, a couple of nuts, but super clean and super delicious.
So clean. Yeah, so clean. Also, to all of the listeners, I was absolutely flabbergasted by the amount of clean and fruity coffees I've tasted in Brazil. I would say that 80% of the coffees that I've tasted did not taste like the Brazil that I know over here in Europe. And so we've tasted all of those coffees. I was very impressed already. And then the show started because I think before I saw it, I didn't really understand how all of those coffees can taste so clean. But then mm-hmm. you showed us huge machines. One of them was the first sorting machine. And you, at the farm, pre-select between mm-hmm. eight different qualities, right?
Yes. So what we do is we test and taste every section of the farm a lot of times until we get the ideal ripening levels. So, but of course, we're talking about a natural product. So even if you choose the moment where most of the cherries are fully ripe, not all of them are going to be ripe. So what we did was develop this system that can separate the cherries that come from the field in eight different maturation levels. And some of them we discard because they just don't taste good. For example, the green cherries, they didn't have enough time to develop sugars and all of that, so they don't taste good. And the very tiny dried ones, because they didn't go through the whole maturation process, they went from green straight to dry, so they also taste terrible. These little tiny dried green beans, these tiny dried cherries, these are the ones who give Brazilian coffee a bad name, or gave Brazilian coffee a bad name back then. If you mix them into the coffee, if you don't sort them out, then yes, then the coffee is going to taste muddy and, you know, not really, that is going to be the factor that makes the coffee not clean. So if you sort them out, everything else in between is tastes really good, has a very different flavor profile. And because we separate all of them, we have so many options. You've seen how many sectors there are in the farm. There are lots of varietals, there are a lot of places. So all of this, we say that this is the mise en place of the terra because it just gives us so much to work with, so many flavors to work with and to combine and to create our menu in a consistent way.
Yeah, and then you, so it's 20 hectares is the farm? No, how many hectares?
Hectares? Well, the whole farm is about 6,000 hectares, but half of, yes, but half of that is the environmental preservation area. So these are just untouched nature. And we have about 2,500 hectares of coffee production.
Yeah. Where did I get the 20 from?
Yeah, no.
Absolutely wrong, Nicole. Maybe 20 hectares of Lorena, I don't know.
Yeah, actually, I think you have the 20 hectares in mind because I told you that we lost 20 hectares of Lorena's.
Yes.
So maybe that's it. Yeah.
Maybe that's it, yeah. And so we were standing in front of this giant, I can't even explain how big this was, pre-sorting mise en place machine. And then and then they were like, we crossed the street and then there was a hall with dryers, 15 maybe
dryers. I think there are maybe like 28 30, yeah. Something, yeah, it's a lot,
but there's a lot of dryers and they all hold tons of coffee. And those dryers are needed to bring the moisture content of the coffee down to, I think you said 11.5.
yes, 11.5.
And it's measured all the time. And then we went to a small room next to the dryers, and that was when I met a familiar face.
Leandro.
No, Leandro. Okay, this is a little bit of gossip. When we were still in Belo Horizonte, there might have been a party. And there might have been a lot of dancing involved from my side. And then maybe I drank some cachaça, and then maybe I don't remember anything, including I apparently forgot my own name. But what I do remember is that I asked Leandra for a dance battle. Classic Nicole move. Quite like to dance a little bit. And I thought, oh, I've got this. I did the splits. I was like, yeah, girl, I'm doing it.
Little did she know.
Then Leandro was a professional dance teacher and he just did a backflip.
Yeah, he's a hip hop dance teacher.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
was awesome. I was just there watching and it felt like a movie, you know, when you see these cheesy 90s movies and, you know, the nice girls versus the mean girls having a dance off in the club, and it just felt like that. And I tried to record it, but it was so fast. So no, you just had to be there. Everyone listening, you just had to be there.
Yes, yeah, it was a magic moment. But don't worry, guys. Wherever there's a barista after party, you might see a lot of dancing people over there. But yeah, we went into this small room, and Leandro was there, and he's like, ah! It's like, ah! and he is, so he is in charge of, he gets the coffee straight out of the dryers, and then he has to quickly sample roast them. He has to cup them, and then he needs to decide what quality grade they are and what they're used for, which is insane, because he said he hates Mondays. Who doesn't? But he said on Mondays he has to roast up to 50 samples and cup them on the same day, and he needs to be finished before 12 o'clock with cupping all of those. How?
Yeah. Well, it's not only him. There are other people helping, but it's just insane. Every time I explain this, I know that these people are doing this every day, but it's mind-blowing, especially during the harvest, because we do this pre-harvest tasting. So he has to taste coffee that is super fresh because it's just straight out of the tree, And he tastes it and he has to know, okay, so the sugars are developed enough. However, fresh coffee tastes super green and he needs to look past that. And he also needs to look past the idea of roast, because when you have so much coffee, so many samples to roast in such a short period of time, you cannot do the ideal roast, right?
So he needs to look... And there's no resting because he drinks them straight out of the roaster.
Yeah.
Which a lot of, sorry, but a lot of European people, baristas that say, I really want to be a roaster. They go and you ask them for some QCing. And you say, obviously, this roast is too fresh. But those baristas say, like, oh, well, I can't taste it because the roast is too fresh. And you're like, no, 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 no. You need to taste beyond the roast. And it is so hard and so difficult learn this. So props
to me,
from the back flip, but also in general to Leandra.
To me, tasting coffee beyond freshness is the most difficult because the fresh flavor is really, really overpowering. So yeah, major, major kudos to the quality team of the Terra, because the work they do is incredible.
And then we went to 1,000 more different sorting machines. I feel like this it's impossible to actually get coffee out of this, because you sort it so much that I'm like, surely. And then yeah, it was just, for me, it was just very incredible to see the amounts of coffee. And mind me, we haven't been there at harvesting season. Like, it's harvesting has been over, it's been done. So I'm guessing that's even worse. It was a lot. It's a lot of coffee.
During the harvest, it's noisier and it's dirtier. But I know that you are coming to visit us sometime during the harvest and you're going to see that.
Yes.
But
it's on the list.
It is.
and then what was also very interesting was, for the masterpieces, you have a completely separate section which has a separate sorting machine. And this is, you said, I think it's the little playground there, because different experiments can be done with the coffee, cherries, and I've seen fermentation, how do I say it, pools. Some of them had only concrete in them and the other ones were tiled. So you can do experiments with, like, the material of your fermentation tank. You also had sealed stainless steel fermentation tanks where you can do anaerobic fermentations. You told me, what I found is really interesting, that you've tried drying coffee underneath different colored glass. So you have your drying chamber, but instead of it just being in foil, I guess that's what it would usually be, you colored and tinted the glass that it's drying on to see which kind of UV light affects the drying.
We also did the same thing with fermentation. So we fermented coffee inside these colored boxes with different colors, because different colors will allow different wavelengths to affect the coffee. And we just wanted to see how coffee would react to that. It's just really, that's why I told you it's our playground, because whenever we have a crazy idea, that's where we take it. That's where we do it. We've been experimenting with a lot of things beyond coffee, beyond colors and sounds.
We talked about the sounds that you try to play different kind of musics to the beans. To find out fragrances that help the fermentation. And so far, it's actually interesting, because you said what has happened is that you've realized that some fragrances don't really change the flavor, but they change the time that it needs to ferment, because
they speed up the fermentation process.
Yeah, but only really heavy metal, right?
Well, the heavy metal, it made the fermentation go faster, but it taste wise, we preferred another type. I can't talk a lot about it because it's not finalized yet. But as soon as we do, I'm gonna send you some samples for you to taste.
Oh yes, but I just think it's amazing to see the how outside of the box you're thinking with those coffees, and then so you're doing all of this fermentation, you're doing all of these experiments, then the great artwork, then all of the design, then everything on top, and then also amazing varieties, because afterwards I got to see my first coffee tree in real life. We went to the farm and we've seen loads of rows with like young plants and plants different age. A small section was even shade grown. Obviously, the farm is massive and huge. So most of it's very high tech. It's very advanced. We've seen a experimental field where you're trying to already plan ahead for what climate change will do to agriculture. And
it's already doing, yeah.
And it's already doing to find out ways of how to plant different other plants maybe in the soil to make it, yeah, more resistant.
This is really important for you to bring up, I think, because especially when we talk to baristas and people who are working with the very high-end coffees from all over the world, I think usually people expect us to bring new varietals just because of they taste better, just because they are more unique. But when we're talking about the production of a farm, it's really important for us to find varietals that are more resilient to climate changes. Because you've seen the data that we have since the 80s until now. A lot is changing, and the trees that were born in a time where the climate were completely different, they are having a hard time. The diseases are getting more resistant. The plagues are getting more resistant. And one of the ways to fight that is to have more resistant plants as well. Mm-hmm. But of course, we can't not prioritize taste as well. So that's why we have to test out so many different varietals, because every time you plant a new varietal for a test, you're only going to see the first results after 3 years. So that's when you start to see if it has a potential for production, for flavor, for resistance, and all that. So it's something that takes a long, long, long time.
And yeah, that's what you said to me when I was there. You said, like, everyone, when Lorena came out in 2018, or like not when it came out, but when it won the Worlds, everyone wanted to have it. But it's been 20 years of development and of research. So baristas just coming and saying like, oh no, we want a new varietal. There's so much time that goes into making a coffee, into creating a new species, into creating something that might, in those 20 years, everything has already changed. Climate has changed. That's why we've already said before that I remember the 20 had this number, because this is how much of Lorena you've already lost because of all of those changes. And it was for me very, very impressive to see that.
Everything in coffee takes a long time, because the plants, they have their time, you know, and sometimes the industry time is not the same as the plant time. It takes a long time. So maybe now we are developing the varietal that will blow people's mind in 10 years. But it's all of this work that is invisible. And so I'm really glad when people like you come and see that for yourself, because I believe that sometimes it's not something that you get to, it's not something that you would think about if you didn't go to a farm and saw that for yourself.
Yeah. It was very, very special. And what I also, I think after we've seen the plants, I got to plant a tree and you brought us to a beautiful picnic where we could see, you've mentioned it before, that a huge amount of the farmland actually is a nature reserve. So it's untouched nature. And you brought us to a beautiful spot where we could see this amazing and beautiful untouched nature with waterfalls. It was too beautiful.
It was really moving for us to see your reaction to all of that. Of course, different people have different reactions to all of this, but I could tell that you were so happy to be there and that you were so enjoying it. So it was really moving. It's something that made me really happy. Not only me, but Livia, Bia, all the other girls who were hosting you there. It was really happy. Like, I remember I told you, hey, Nicole, so we have now two surprises for you. And one of the surprises was planting the tree, which you teared up a little bit. And the second one, we say, okay, get in the truck and let's go. And so I was inside the truck, but I was seeing you from outside, and I could see that your eyes were like glistening and that you were tearing up a little bit. So I even told the girl, said, does she think that the truck ride is the surprise? I was wondering that.
Yeah, even if that would have been a surprise, it was so, so beautiful. And you've already mentioned that you haven't shown us around by yourself. There was Beatrice, and there was Livia. Livia is, can you say the professional?
Yes, she's an agronomic engineer. She's one of the agronomic engineers of the Terra.
So she's amazing, and she's made this research field where you're trying to experiment with lots of other plants to plant. And it's for me, coming back home, and I've talked to Jill about it, I'm like, I am so like incredibly, I feel very, very calm and very happy, but also mm-hmm. I'm so impressed that everyone who's been in charge so far that's talked to us and that's taken care of us, it's all women. And for some reason I was like, it made me like, I realized this, I know this should be absolutely normal for everyone, but coming from a other industry, which is, I still don't think it's normal in coffee producing industry, actually, to be honest.
Absolutely not at all.
How is it for you? How is it that there are so many amazing women working at doTERRA? Is it like, I don't know, is there a program, or is there something that you can take part? Or do you think it's just a modern and how companies should be company?
I think it's just how companies should be. There are some programs that we do. Because some areas, especially when we're talking about the field, some areas are a lot male dominated. So if you want to introduce more women to these areas, then we have to do a program. For example, I think we only had one lady who drove trucks around the farm. So we did a program for women to bring more women to that field, because it's sometimes women would think that their work could only be done in the nursery or in the hand picking, but you know, who said you can't drive a truck or, you know, drive a harvesting machine? No, you could, why not? So we did this program a couple of times, but as for everything else, I think it's just very natural for us. We do have a lot of women in all the areas. We have a lot of women in leadership, and that is not common at all, especially in this rural area and this rural world that we are in. And I think it just makes for me personally, it makes things a lot easier and lighter, you know, to know that I'm not going to have to be breaking so many barriers, because I am working with women who understand all the challenges that we face solely for being women. And yeah, I think it's just very natural for us at this point. We do work with a lot of women. Of course, we also work with a lot of men from all backgrounds, all type of people. And well, I think that what diversity means, right? A lot of different people working together, and we work really well together.
For me, it was just a perfect showcase of how a company that where there's a lot of women working, and that, like when we went to the lab, when we went to the cuppings, like there were the two ladies that doing the cupping, everything just felt very, for me as a visitor, I never felt like I'm being talked at, or like, you know what I mean? Like it just felt very, I just felt very welcome and very calm the whole time, and very, I don't know, I felt that this environment of you guys all working together also made you become a very good version of yourself. I don't think at any point that I've asked you, what do you think about your work? And you were like, oh, it's so stressful. I mean, it is stressful, but you can be your true self. You can be extremely creative and within that, very, very productive. So I think doTERRA is a beautiful role model for women succeeding in their job. actually.
Yes, totally. I think maybe if we didn't have so many women working in doTERRA, maybe I wouldn't have the space that I have and the freedom that I have to be so creative and to talk about our coffees and to sell our coffees in such different ways. Maybe if it was a company with only men, you know, maybe I wouldn't get this chance. Maybe they wouldn't understand the value of creativity in coffee. So I can only be thankful for that.
Yeah. And it works. It's like it's been a encounter for me that I will cherish for the rest of my life, because it's made me show how incredibly creative coffee is. And it's at the same time, I was like, I was coming home and I felt like this is so annoying for me myself, because I realized how closed off I was. I've always worked in hospitality. I've worked in Michelin star restaurants, and I know that especially in fine dining, art and culture and architecture, they are all part of your experience when you go out for a fancy dinner and customer service, obviously. But why it's just another question for me, why do we not continuously do this within coffee? Because coffee is art. Coffee isn't just a clean modernist bar. It is so much more. It is culture, it is heritage, it is identity in a lot of ways. If it's the identity of the origin, or if it's your identity when you open a shop and when you sell something.
I think for everyone that I've met in the industry, coffee is never just a job for them. So I don't see why we wouldn't incorporate so many other parts of the things that we enjoy, like arts and culture and all of the things that make us, you know, into our work in coffee. I think coffee has the space for that. And I'm really grateful to see that the coffee industry has the interest in that, because I've seen that through the auctions. Sometimes it's a lot of work to tell the stories, and I caught myself wondering, are people even going to care about this? Does anybody even read all of this stuff? But then I see people telling their customers in a cafe, you know, all the way to the end of the chain. And I say, yeah, people care. People are interested in all this. So it just gives us the energy to keep doing what we do.
Yeah. So now that this year's masterpiece and this year's auction is done, are you already visualizing the concept for next year?
Yes. Yes. I do. I have a few ideas. We've been talking about it a lot. This week I want to decompress a little bit, because it's stressful. But I can't help but think about next year. I do have a couple of ideas, so let's see how it progresses over the year. But I'm so happy with how the auction and the campaign turned out this year that I'm actually a bit scared that next year is not going to be that good. Yeah. No. So that's something that worries me a bit. But no, I think fortunately Brazil will never stop being a source of inspiration. You've been to Brazil for a couple of days, and I think maybe you will agree with me that there are, I will never run out of stories to tell. So
something
will come.
For everyone who might want to meet you one day or chat with you, will you be in, because obviously you have a lot of European listeners, will you be in Athens in June?
I hope so. We haven't finalized yet who's traveling where for next year.
Okay.
But yeah, well, if I tell my boss, Gabriel, that Nicole specifically asked me to be in Athens,
absolutely,
then I think she's not going to say no. I tried telling him that I needed to go to Berlin for this podcast, but it didn't work. Maybe for Athens it will.
It's necessary. I need to show you around, you know, like now that you're famous because you've been on this podcast, people want to see you, people want to get to know you. It's important. It's important that you're there.
Yes. So as soon as we start working on the budget for next year, I'm going to bring that and say, you know, like that's, it's not optional. I have to go to Athens.
Well, it's already been nearly 1.5 hours now.
Yeah.
Juliana, this has been a beautiful chat with you.
Thank you so much. I told you before we started that you are the kind of person that I could go on and talk for hours. And now we see that that is true. So thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really happy.
Thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. Once again, for everyone who wants to learn more about beautiful Brazilian coffee and about doTERRA, you can visit their website. Can you say the website again? It's just so, doTERRA.
Yeah, it's doTERRACoffee.com.br. And if you want to know more about the masterpieces, then you can go to auction.doTERRACoffee.com.br.
And you can follow Juliana on Instagram.
Yeah.
Juliana,
yes.
Zorati, and also she's a very, not just a very creative and within the coffee world, but also just a very creative person in general.
Well, yeah, thank you.
So check out her artwork. It's really beautiful. And yeah, that was a beautiful episode of She's the Barista, and I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Juliana, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. You can invite me anytime. You too. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
At this point, I would like to thank Rancilio Germany for supporting this podcast one more time. And yeah, what shall I tell you? I think you could hear that I was super, super excited talking about Brazil. And for me, it was the very, very first time being at Origin and seeing a coffee farm. And doTERRA is incredible. It's just one of the most modern farms in the world. And there was just so much coffee, so many trees. I learned so much. And what actually was a day felt like a week, because there were just so many new impressions. And I want to thank Juliana one more time for, yeah, making my time there so great, educating me on so many things, showing me everything. And she is such an inspiration for me, because I came back to Germany showing my husband the booklet that she made, and I was just like, why is it so hard for us at the end of the chain at the coffee shop to be as creative? Because yes, of course, when I was working in restaurants, and especially in Michelin star restaurants, it was clear that arts and culture have something to do with your food experience. So you would listen to classic music or other music, and there would be art everywhere, and everything would be like really detailed. But when it comes to coffee, we're just like, oh yeah, everything needs to be very modern, very clean. And I think it's because we do not have the time to go to the customers and give them the service. And I think that's what I want to change. I want people to have these grand ideas, these big concepts, and really take the customer on a journey. Because that's what Juliana did with me. She took me on a journey to explore these coffees. And it's an adventure that I really, really am grateful for. Even at the end of this podcast, I start rumbling again. I think you could definitely tell that Juliana meant a great deal for me, and I can't wait to see her again, hopefully. And yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. That was the episode number 19, I think, of the She's the Barista podcast. Thank you so much, and hear you soon.